couple of days ago, I published an article called Solidarity in the Time of Coronavirus. And the idea behind this was really to map out a way of getting through this that ensures that human solidarity and communities stay strong through what is a time of isolation and social distancing. So I think that there's a possibility that social distancing becoming the new normal, as Jacinda said last night, could have serious effects, not just through the course of the pandemic, but in the future as well. And I'm really keen to try and make sure, as much as possible, that community groups and societies and organisations do as much as they can to support people during the outbreak, not just because it'll lead to better outcomes for everyone, but because it'll lead to the survival of those organisations in the future.
We don't have a timeline for when we can expect this all to be over, right? Like, we can kind of expect this to go on indefinitely until we have an idea of when it's actually starting to slow down. So I guess it would be good to actually preserve our connections within our communities, especially in a time when people are a bit scared.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we're already seeing, I don't know if you've seen, but Facebook groups popping up around the country from communities of people wanting to help out other people. I think this is an awesome sign, but we're really just at the start of this, I think, and we're going to be in it for the long haul, and so we've got to make sure that those sorts of responses can scale up and are sustainable and can continue over the course of who knows how long.
Yeah, and I guess you kind of highlighted in your article that a pandemic is different from other, like, similarly destructive events like natural disasters, because it's actually our sociality that is both a, you know, it's kind of viewed as a threat, but it's also how we're going to persevere through this.
Yeah, exactly. And I do want to make it clear that, you know, I think that we should be following the advice of social distancing and self-isolation if you're in, if you are at risk or you've been in contact with people who are at risk. But it's a huge challenge, right, for people, because, as you say, our social connections and our community connections are what's going to get us through this. So, yeah, there's a lot to think about. And I think that a lot of organisations and individuals will be doing a lot of thinking about the best way to respond to it as it goes on.
You said in your article that this has sort of created this culture of overly cautious individualism. And you see that through things like people panic buying, people refusing to leave their homes at all. And I was just wondering how much of this logic is kind of innate to us as people and how much of it is cultural conditioning.
I think that lots of it is specific to the logic of a pandemic. We are the victor of spreading the virus. Whereas if we look at responses, community responses and also government responses to other sorts of disasters, they're all about bringing people together and people getting together and doing things together, fixing, rebuilding, eating, that sort of thing, right? And so I think that there is an innate human response to come together in a time of crisis, and the Facebook groups that I mentioned before of people wanting to do that are a good sign of that. And I know that in countries that have been worse affected than us, we've seen, for example, in Italy, the videos of people singing on their balconies and sort of having some form of social contact, even though they can't be close to each other. And I think those are the things that need to be fostered rather than sort of cut down on during this time.
Yeah, definitely. The sort of distrust of others that we have and viewing other people as, like, overt threats isn't actually helpful.
No, it's not. There's a couple of things there, because actually it seems like a rational response, right, to want to isolate yourself. And in some situations it isn't a rational response when if you are sick or you've got the virus, because we want to stop the spread of the virus.
But hoarding toilet paper is
not the answer, no.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I think that one possibility is that people are skeptical of the ability for the government to respond to this and to make sure that everyone does have what they need. That possibly goes some way to explaining the panic buying.
I guess it's kind of symptomatic of, like, in New Zealand, there's kind of this attitude that people have of, you know, just like, fuck you, I got mine. You know?
Yeah, sure. I can see that. You know, I think that some of the darkest sides of our society will come out throughout this process, as well as some of the best things about human nature, right? I mean, to me, I think that human nature is, I don't know what I think about human nature, but I think that people, there is an innate drive for collectivity and an innate drive for people to come together in times of crisis, but there's also a drive for self-preservation, right? And so I think that the thing that we've got to be doing, and the government has a role to play in this, and community organisations have a role to play in this, is making sure that people see that self-preservation is actually intimately interlinked with community organisation and with sticking together and getting through this as a collective.
If there is any truth to human nature, I guess it is that we are social creatures at heart.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess this also just kind of shows that, like, looking out for only yourself, it hits a limit, right? Like, you know, with most disasters, you can see that, like, wealth insulates people from the worst effects of it. But here we've got Peter Dutton getting testing positive, Justin Trudeau's wife, Tom Hanks, right?
Yeah.
It's you know, just we're seeing the failings of an individualist approach in the face of what is a public health crisis.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that, I guess, what we see, and this is common to all disasters as well, but they reveal the underlying sort of crises in societies, right? And so what we're seeing now here, I think, is that our healthcare system, our housing, our benefit system, our entire economic system, isn't actually fit for purpose. And that's been revealed and exacerbated by these conditions, right?
Definitely.
So the solutions that that the government is going to be offering in this package, I think, shouldn't just be short-term solutions, but should be focused on long-term structural changes so that we're better prepared in the future, not just through this pandemic.
Yeah, I want to focus a bit on that later, but now I just want to focus on healthcare. This makes it clear just how important public services like these are. And so much of New Zealand's response right now is focused on containment because our health system does not have the capacity to handle an outbreak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you might remember last year and the year before, even through this year, actually, there's been stories constantly in the media about how DHBs are underfunded, how there's not enough beds, there's not enough staff.
Yeah, just like over the winter, because of flu season, we're seeing hospitals at capacity already. So
exactly, yeah, and that's going to coincide this year, of course, with the coronavirus flu season. So I think that, you know, we need to be looking at long-term infrastructure investments. We need to be looking at encouraging people to work in healthcare, and that comes in many forms, but one of them is making sure that especially nurses and healthcare assistants are paid livable wages, and it's an attractive profession to go into. And yeah, I mean, we need to, you know, stop this austerity sort of mindset that's been around for however many years now, and actually think about investing in public infrastructure.
And I guess these are all issues that nurses and doctors have been speaking about for years. You know,
absolutely.
Like they...
And I think one of the other things that that's really important throughout this crisis is that unions and advocacy organisations need to be at the centre of providing the solutions, right? So the nurses' unions, the doctors' unions, midwives' unions have been saying all of these things for years and haven't been listened to. But they're the people with the most experience representing the views of people working in the healthcare system who really know what's going on. And so I think that unions are really essential to being at the centre of solutions for this.
Yes, that's just another example of, like, grassroots organising actually being very important for building resilient communities.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So, I guess you already alluded to this a bit earlier, but what are your hopes for the government response that's going to be announced today?
Look, I'm going to be looking out for sick leave provisions. So I'd expect to see something that's you know, a fund that employers can apply to make sure that people can stay on sick leave as long as they need, to keep those jobs open for people to return to. I think we also need to look for funds for precarious workers, casual workers and contractors, the self-employed, who are very likely to see a huge dip in business around this time. Part of that might be the end to sanctions and benefit stand downs that have already been proposed. So I think we need to make sure that everyone who's on the benefit is actually on a livable income and can get through this crisis. One of the things that we've seen overseas in Italy has been suspensions of mortgage payments. I think that's a potential area for the government to look at, suspension of mortgage payments, but also a suspension on rent payments during the period of crisis. If people are going to be losing their jobs and potentially downgrading from incomes that they're on to the benefit, we really need to look at making sure that people can get through this and be able to stay living where they're living. But also in terms of housing, you know, we've got a lot of homeless people, a lot of people in overcrowded housing. Mm. And we need to look at that, because that's going to be a huge factor for people not actually being able to isolate, right?
Yeah, how can you stay at home when you don't have a home, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, people living in their cars or on the streets or in shelters or even in, as I say, overcrowded housing where there's several families living in the same home, that's where we're going to see huge spread, I think. And that's what I mean when I say that this reveals and exacerbates an underlying crisis in our society. And the government needs to, I think, take the opportunity to not just do short-term measures, but to really make some big changes to the system that we're living in.
And that's interesting, because I was reading an article yesterday about how some countries in the US have done similar things with rent payments. You know, like, police aren't allowed to help landlords evict tenants who can't make rent anymore in some counties. And other counties have also suspended arrests for minor offences to avoid overcrowding jails. And the article kind of made this point that these rapid reforms demonstrate not only that governments can act when they're actually willing to, but also that a lot of these rules and laws that are in place are quite arbitrary to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that everything that I've talked about, the underfunded healthcare system, people, the huge amount of homeless people and people living in overcrowded housing, the benefit levels that people can't live on, all of these, none of these things are just natural, right? These are all political decisions that have been made to that mean that people are living in these sorts of situations. And what we see here, obviously, is a pandemic, a crisis that's going to put a lot of pressure on our systems, but it's also an opportunity now that these are really clear that that this is happening to make some changes that will last beyond beyond the short to medium term. I think prisons is a really good example of that, where you know, we've got people living already in overcrowded prisons with double bunking and things like that.
Yeah, New Zealand has one of the highest prison populations in the world.
Yeah. If we're going to be continuing to bring people in to prisons from the outside, then it's not going to be long before we see the disease spreading in prisons as well, and that's going to be a nightmarish sort of scenario. So, I think there's a lot of things that can be done that'll be good, not just for getting us through the pandemic, but also for the future.
Yeah, and I guess if these, like, positive reforms were applied because of the pandemic, do you think we would be able to return to what we now see as normal afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to predict the future at the moment, I think, and anyone who says that they know what's going to happen in, even in a couple of weeks' time or a couple of months' time is fooling themselves, I think. But yeah, this is the best chance that I see, is a genuine sort of spending package that focuses on the real problems in the system and finding real solutions to them, is the best chance that we've got to getting back to normal, or perhaps even something better than normal.
Even though we are in the midst of a crisis right now, there's still some hope in that.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think that we can't give up hope and we can't give up optimism, and it's on all of us to be working through this crisis and trying to make the best out of it, and that's, you know, that's right from grassroots community organisations to individuals who aren't connected to any organisations to the government and business, and all sectors of society need to be doing what they can to get us through this.
It's really about how we respond collectively that's going to decide the future of this right now.
I think that's absolutely right. Yeah.
Cool. So did you have any last things that you wanted to say or add?
it's really important that employers don't start using this as an opportunity to ram through changes to staffing and hours or cutting jobs that they wanted to do anyway, and start using the viral pandemic as a cover for that. So that's what I mean by business having to play ball and making sure that we have a real people-centred response to this as well.
What do you think of David Seymour's proposal that we suspend all of the proposed increases to the minimum wage because of the coronavirus?
I think that's shocking. I think, you know, what we already know is that people on the current minimum wage and even on the increased minimum wage still won't be on a living wage, right? And the key to this, I think, is going to be making sure that everyone has enough money to survive on getting through a pandemic, right, whether you're working or not. Proposing that we stop measures that'll go some way to increasing people's incomes and making sure that people do have enough money to get through this, I think it's really irresponsible and opportunistic in a gross, cynical way.